So NTI Hebrews 8 in the Kindle, and my Kindle is 407. How about you guys?
408.
408 in the paperback book. That's nice. Hebrews 8 on 408. Mm-hmm. All right, so here we go. It just starts right in the middle. I wonder if I wrote two chapters in one day, because usually it had more of a soft start at the beginning of a chapter. The point of what I am saying is this. You know your true desire because it lives within you. When you are aware of it, you know that it is true. This is what I am saying. Jesus lives in your mind as a symbol of truth because Jesus has let go and is no longer dreaming. Now, before I continue, I want to stop because I know where it's going, and there's another point I want to make before I continue. What I love about this first paragraph, verses 1 and 2, is that it says, you know your true desire, and when you're aware of it, you know that it's true. And I think we all know that when we get into contemplation or meditation or devotion or whatever drops us all the way in, right? When we're all the way there, we know there's nothing else that we want. I mean, it's so obvious. You know, I think I mentioned before, but there's a song by Francesca Battistelli that she talks about how in the presence of God, everything else grows dim. And that's what happens, you know, when you drop in and you get in touch with that true desire, get in touch with that inner space, that inner silence, that inner devotion, whatever it feels like for you, nothing else. This is important. You know, nothing else matters. And that's kind of like what I was talking about before we turned on the recorder. When I was in the chapel in Santa Barbara, everything fell away. Everything fell away. I mean, I would have done anything in that moment. I would have left my daughter. I would have gone anywhere. I would have, you know, given away all my money. I would have done anything because I was so aware that this was the only thing I wanted, right? So you know your true desire because it lives within you. When you are aware of it, you know that it is true. This is what I am saying. Jesus lives in your mind as a symbol of your truth because Jesus has let go and is no longer dreaming. If he was here in the dream with you, he would be a reflection of the dreams in your mind. Because he is not, you know that he must be awakened, and you listen to his voice willingly along with mine. Okay, so what that is really saying is, if Jesus was sitting here across from you, and you happened to be in his inner circle, and you got to know him really well, you would probably talk about him behind his back. You say, did you see what Jesus did last night? I didn't think an enlightened person would do that. You know? Wow. Did you see the way Jesus looked at her? I'm not sure what he meant by that. I'm thinking that maybe Jesus was thinking this, right? And you would start projecting all of your ideas onto Jesus. And so what he's saying is the human form is not actually the best form because we have a tendency to project onto the human and we're going to see whatever we project. He says that the reason Jesus works so well for you is because Jesus isn't in human form. Jesus is the heart. Jesus is the inner self. And when you get in touch with that, you can't project onto that. And so Jesus as a symbol is very, very powerful. As a man, he would be a little less powerful. And it's funny because I know that we have people that are living now that are just as enlightened as Jesus. And most of them will not be noticed at all. And if they are, it won't be until after they're dead. Because of the way we are with living bodies. You know, we idolize those that aren't here and we find things to judge about those who are. You know?
Just like artists.
Just like what?
Artists, like painters.
Yes. Oh, I mean, we value artists after they're dead
like
as well?
Da Vinci and stuff like that.
Yes.
Not necessarily that famous and their artwork wasn't really sought after until they were.
Yeah, they weren't appreciated in their time. Yeah, but as a symbol, what Jesus really represents is that is the heart or the inner self or the inner soul, whatever you want to call it. And that is something that is beyond judgment. Now, listen to sentence 5. Jesus does not speak in words when he speaks clearest to the mind that is your heart. Jesus speaks as a knowing. And because it is a knowing that you know, you realize in your knowingness that this knowing is a knowing that is true. How many times did I say knowing in that sentence? Follow it to your truth. In its knowingness, the voice without words leads you there. My experience on the spiritual path, you know, very quickly became the experience of a scribe. That was my job for a time. And because that was my job, I heard words. And many, many people seem to think they should hear words too. But my scribal experience ended at a certain point in 2009. And since then, I don't hear words. Like this latest guidance that came for the retreat center, there was not a single word. I did not hear start a retreat center. I did not hear build an environment where people can really get in touch with their self. These are the words I put on it. But the interesting thing was, I knew. Like, it was a silent intelligence. I didn't have to interpret it. It was direct. You know, there was no interpretation. I didn't have to say, ooh, I wonder what that meant. And, you know, it was completely a direct knowing, an absolute knowing of what I was to do. And that's what this is saying. It's saying, you know, when Jesus speaks clearest, and again, remember, Jesus is a symbol, so it could be when God speaks clearest, when the heart speaks clearest, when the universe speaks clearest. But when Jesus speaks clearest, there are no words at all. So don't look for the words, right? But the silence is actually intelligent. It's communicative. In fact, Ramana Maharshi says that the silence is the clearest teacher of all. And again, that's because there's nothing to interpret. We can interpret words. You know, when I sent out the email to my team, when I came back from the chapel and I sent an email to my team saying we were going to start a retreat center, immediately there were interpretations about what retreat center meant, and it didn't mean the same thing to everybody else. Everybody had different ideas. I knew what it meant because I received the communication. I have a very clear idea what it means, but I didn't have to interpret that. Other people are having to interpret, right? So they have other ideas about what the word retreat center means, and they have other ideas about what we're going to do there, and I'm just waiting because I feel that sometime it will all fall into place where everybody will get the vision, right? but the silence is so intelligent and so direct, you don't need the mind's interpretive faculty to understand it. It's actually beyond the mind. It's clear, direct communication without a single solitary word. That's what this is saying. And then it says, follow it to your truth. In its knowingness, it still calls it the voice, even though it's silence. The voice, in fact, it says the voice without words, right, leads you there. I once looked up the word voice in the dictionary. And I might do that again right this second, because I was pretty surprised. I always thought of a voice as an audible sound, but at least the dictionary I was using that day had one more possibility. Let me see if I can find it here. Okay, the first one is the sound or sounds uttered. The second one is the faculty or power of uttering sounds. The third one is a range of sounds. The fourth one is the condition or effectiveness of the voice, a sound. Oh, here's one. Number six, something likened to speech as conveying impressions to the mind, like the voice of nature. That has nothing to do with sound. And it's still the word voice.
Yeah.
Right? Oops, I accidentally hit it. I didn't want to do that. Expression in spoken or written words. Expressed wish or injunction, such as being obedient to the voice of God. Again, that doesn't have to have sound. So not all of the definitions of the word voice have anything to do with sound. And I think when people see the word voice in NTI, in A Course in Miracles, or in any other spiritual writings that use that word, they think, I'm supposed to hear something. And this is saying voice has other meanings. And then what is being said here in NTI is it's actually the clearest when it makes no sound at all. Because there's no interpretation then. It's a direct communication. So, you know, anybody who's trying to hear a voice can kind of let go of that. Mm. It's not necessary. It's not even the best way to hear it.
You know, when you dream, it's me. I don't hear words either. It's a knowing. Or
a
it's
knowing.
Just like it's just imparted and you just know.
Yeah.
You've got the information and oh, it's just like that.
I love the way you said that. It's imparted. You know, it's just imparted, like, yes, and you just know.
Do you dream like that too?
I don't know. I've heard you talk about your dreams with such clarity after you're awake, but I can't do the same thing.
That sounds familiar for me. Like sometimes I'll hear voices and talk and stuff, but sometimes like somebody might all of a sudden be in the picture or something, and then I realize for a second, I'm like, who is this or whatever, and then all of a sudden I just know, and like I know what we're doing. Or something without us talking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's what you mean, but
yeah, sort of like.
So yeah, I just kind of understand like what situation I'm in all of a sudden without any communication.
It happens when Danielle moved to Pueblo and Regina was guided to show us around. I came to visit. Regina was guided to show us a lot around, and I felt that it wasn't just for Danielle.
Mm.
I felt okay. There's more to it than that.
Without knowing. 4 years later, you'd be moving.
Yeah, there. Right. Yeah, but there was something there.
I like that paragraph enough that I'm going to read it again. Jesus does not speak in words when he speaks clearest to the mind that is your heart. It's also interesting that it calls our heart a mind. Do you see that? You know, which means there's an intelligence there, that intelligence to understand, right? That intelligence to receive. Jesus does not speak in words when he speaks clearest to the mind that is your heart. Jesus speaks as a knowing. And because it is a knowing that you know, you realize in your knowingness that this knowing is a knowing that is true. Follow it to your truth. In its knowingness, the voice without words leads you there. This is the truth that you must know, because it is written on your heart and cannot be unknown there. All dreams must pass away. If you are to pass beyond dreams, you must not pass away with them. The only way to not pass with them is not to be attached as they pass away on their own. Now that's something that we can practice with everyday things like kitchen cabinets. One of the things I've done this year and last year was I spent probably $10,000 total, xeriscaping my front and backyard. Well, guess what? That's not going to last forever. You know, I don't know how many years down the road, but a certain number of years down the road, I'm going to notice, oh my God, it has to be xeriscaped again, or change my mind, or let the weeds grow. Something's going to have to happen, right? So, but if I'm really attached, like I spent $10,000, I want this to stay perfect forever, what's going to happen to me? I'm going to get frustrated.
Yeah,
it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt because it's not going to happen. It's not going to last forever. And this is saying nothing lasts forever. And, you know, on the one hand, it's really recommending non-attachment. But I think there's even a deeper meaning here. I think the biggest dream of all is the dream that I'm Regina. Right? Regina's going to die. Somebody told me the other day, I don't like the word die. Because people don't die. And I said inside myself, yes, they do. Because they do. Every person dies. That's not what lives forever.
Yeah, right?
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Every person ends, just like my xeriscaping is going to end. That's not what lasts forever. So with that in mind, look at this again. All dreams must pass away. If you are to pass beyond dreams, you must not pass away with them. The only way to not pass with them is not to be attached as they pass away on their own.
Right. Yeah.
You're saying right. Yeah, go ahead.
I love that. There's a couple things I really like.
potentially you could pass away with the dream, is what I'm getting. So you can become attached as the dream passes and you grab it, and 2 weeks later you decide, you know, something happens and you, okay, I'll let go, you know. But that's, it sounds to me like that's maybe what one way of looking at that. As they pass away on their own, things by their nature self-liberate from the space that you're in. So they come and then they cause whatever tension, and then they, and of their own accord, they,
I love that, things self-liberate. Meaning self-liberate. Thoughts, emotions, personalities, everything self-liberates. Yeah. So, now of course, what we are can never die. So this isn't a threat, like if you're attached to that personality, you're gonna die. Because that can't happen. But what I think can happen is an enormous amount of suffering. And I have no idea what suffering may occur if I'm really attached to thinking I'm Regina and Regina dies. But there must be the possibility of some kind of a suffering to happen, not an easy letting go of that. Mm-hmm. And so that's what this is saying. You have to realize everything that is temporary, and you are eternal, so you are going to last longer than everything that you know now. And you can't be attached to anything, not even what appears to be yourself, or you're going to suffer. You need to be the space that lets everything come and go, right? Lets everything come and go. And you want to be focused on being that space. Sentence 5 says, let them go. Dreams will go on their own if you do not struggle to hold on to them. Verse 13. This is the truth you must practice within your dreams. See yourself letting go of every person, every concept, and everything. Be willing to hold on to nothing, and you are willing to awaken from dreams. So we practice letting go of what appears to be our external attachments. But really, all of those external attachments are, you could call them a fiber of the personality. So if I can let go of everything that Regina cares about, I'm probably a lot better off, and I can let go of Regina a lot more easily, right? And if I hold on to everything that Regina cares about, then I'm also really holding on to Regina. So you practice by letting go of what appears to be outside attachments, but what you're really doing is letting go of the personality. Take this opportunity to be honest in exercise with yourself. What is it that you do not want to let go? What is it within dreams that you have put your faith and trust in? What is it?
Everything.
That's what I was just thinking. That's exactly what I was going to mind. There's not anything I can think of that hasn't, at least.
Yeah, it's funny because I know when I first wrote this, I know that there was something that was very clear. And right this second, I don't even remember what it was. And also, there's nothing popping into my mind right now, although I'm not saying that there isn't anything. I'm just saying it isn't popping into my mind right now. What is it that you do not want to let go? What is it within dreams that you have put your faith and trust in?
I definitely agree with her, everything, but on a different level, a few, like a paragraph back when you were talking about, you know, being attached to the idea that you're Regina.
Yeah.
It kind of just jumped out at me, like, just seeing, like, ghosts or spirits or whatever.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why, like, ghosts are haunting or still around, is because they're still attached to their identity.
Personality.
They're not ready to just be what they are. And they're so attached to that life that they had in that person, so they stay in the house.
Yes.
Or wherever.
I had that thought too, but I didn't know if it was appropriate as the teacher for me to say that. But I had that thought as well, that that might be what ghosts are, people who could not accept letting go of the personality or the life, even though it's over.
They're so invested in being that person.
That's
that
they can't
see, like, wow, there's all this.
That's right.
You know, I'm not stuck there anymore. And
that's right.
They want to still be there. And that's kind of, you know, so then that came back at this part too, you know, what is it with their dreams? Probably the most powerful, it'd be everything, but the most powerful thing would be your attachment to you being a person.
Yeah, your attachment to you being a person. And even if you are able to let go of this personality, and I think this is where the reincarnation experience comes from. In the reincarnation experience, you let go of this personality, but even though you let go of this personality, you don't let go of being, I'm going to call it a mind, an individual mind.
Right.
Right? You're willing to put on another personality just so you can stay.
You still want to be a person.
You still want to be a person. Yeah, exactly. You're very attached to that.
And then to me, that seems like that belief, you know, believing that you're a person and not being able to let go of that could be the biggest thing, that the biggest obstacle to letting go of any other attachment. You know,
yes.
It's very hard to let go of like any other physical attachment if you can't let go of attachment to being a person.
Exactly. I think you're dead on. You're correct. That's probably the biggest thing we can't let go of is being a person. If there is anything you trust to be true within dreams, that is the thought of dreams for you. Be willing to let that thought go, and you give willingness to awaken fully from dreams. So, well, I guess I'm going for it. I'm going to go for the next chapter. It feels too early to stop tonight. So here we go. The covenant of the first order, that is, the covenant symbolized by the covenant given to Moses, is preparation for the covenant of the new order. But both the covenant of the first order and the covenant of the new order are within the dream. For no covenant is needed when the dream is no more. So I had an understanding of the Bible, and so I knew what this meant. People who don't have an understanding of the Bible may have more trouble understanding this. But covenant would be law. And the law that was given to Moses is actually quite extensive. Most people are familiar with the part called the Ten Commandments. But it's very, very extensive. I mean, there's laws about every day, every moment of Jewish life almost. And that is the covenant that was given to Moses. And the real reason the covenant was given to Moses was to make the people of Israel into a nation, into a oneness. Because they really were quite scattered in the way they thought, and they fought among each other. And so the purpose of the law was to make them into a nation, to give them a single way of thinking instead of a lot of different ways of thinking. And what this is saying is that covenant, that law, was preparation for the covenant of the new order. And the covenant of the new order would be the covenant given to Jesus, which was a much simpler covenant. You know, love one another as I have loved you was the primary covenant. But out of the Jewish law, he also kept love God with your whole heart, your whole soul, all of your mind and all of your strength, and also love your neighbor as yourself. You know, very, very simple, simple law that Jesus gave. And this law is superior to the myriads of laws that Moses was given. But it says that even Jesus' law is still within the dream, right? And so there's an awakening beyond the need for any law at all. So starting with sentence 2, each covenant is a symbol of your willingness and your readiness to awaken. The first covenant is the covenant of respect, where you recognize a sameness among you and your brothers, and so you agree to treat them with the respect and treatment that you would have given to you. This is a holy covenant. It need not be broken as you mature within the understanding of your truth. The new covenant is greater than the first, for the new covenant symbolizes advancement from the understanding of sameness to the acceptance of oneness. This is the most holy covenant within the dream. For within the acceptance of this oneness, all sins are forgiven, because it is accepted and understood that sin could never have existed. You are advancing in your maturity. Through your willingness, you are advancing to full acceptance of your truth. So when we get to the point where we see there's just no sin in anyone, it doesn't matter what they do, you can't see it as sin. You can see it as confusion. You can see it as suffering, right? But you can't see it as sin. Then what this is saying is you're really maturing in your faith at this point. You know, you're going very, very far in your faith. That was a funny noise.
Exclamation
point. Yeah. Verses 11 to 14. Jesus is the symbol of light for you, because he seemed to give his life, and yet he did not die. This is the symbol that you may give up your self-will, and yet you will not die. In this symbol, you see that you may give up your dream and your belief in any seemingly separate and individual will, and yet you will not die. In the giving up, you shall be raised up to heaven. This is the true understanding of the perception of Jesus' resurrection. And raised up to heaven here, of course, is just a symbol. Because, you know, NTI is very clear that, you know, there's not a place called heaven, right? So this is just a symbol. But it's saying that as you let go of the individual will, the idea of a me, all of that, that's what awakens. That's really what awakens, is letting go of yourself. So you said the belief that we're a person is the primary attachment. This is saying that's the attachment you need to let go of. When you let go of that, you awaken. Verse 15. For this reason, Jesus has been selected as a symbol by the Holy Spirit. It is that his story may be used to continually teach you who you are until you have the need for stories no more. Stories of the world are helpful, but only to the extent that the stories are understood to be dreams. To pass from this world to the awakening, the mind of Jesus released faith in the stories of the dream. In this release, the idea of Jesus died. So this is saying, just like you have to let go of who you think you are, Jesus had to let go of Jesus. To Jesus, there is no Jesus. Right? Yeah. To Jesus, there is no Jesus, you know? So sometimes we're really, you know, when we're really clinging to Jesus, not as a symbol, but as a person, what we're really indirectly doing is clinging to ourselves, clinging to the belief in personhood. Jesus let the idea of Jesus die, right? And we need to let the idea of who we think we are die as well. Follow that model. Verses 23 to 28. The symbol of Jesus is a symbol of everything that is true for you. This is important for you to accept, for as you accept Jesus as separate from you, you choose to limit yourself to the perception of the first covenant. As you choose to accept Jesus as a symbol of all that is true about you, you choose to rise within yourself to the acceptance of the new covenant. I was reading a Hindu story today. Well, actually, it was a very, very long story. I only read an excerpt of it, about King Janaka. Have you guys ever heard of him? I think that's how you say it, King Janaka. He was apparently a happy king, a good king, you know, cared about people. But one day he heard some enlightened people sharing, they were actually singing devotional songs, but they were singing from their experience of no person. And when he heard that, he was like, oh, you know, all that I think I am, you know, it's not enough. You know, to be a good king, to be a righteous king, it's not enough. The king's going to die, you know. And he said, I want to realize the self. And he then became totally dedicated. He would spend a lot of time in meditation. When people would come and try to pull him out of meditation to be the king, he'd say, the king's not important, you know. And he'd stay in meditation. Eventually, however, he became so, I'm going to say, advanced in his ability to stay focused on the self that he didn't need to meditate anymore. He was able to go back to being the king, but without being the king, right? And it says through that, it was, according to the poem, it was through being the king without being the king that he actually awakened. So when he awakened, he was back to his busyness. But he was doing it in the detached way that this is recommending, right? He was able to be the king without being the king. So can you be Francine without being Francine? And Wayne without being Wayne? And Dan without being Dan? And Priscilla without being Priscilla? And Regina without being Regina? That's how King Janaka awakened. So he did sit down at first and meditate and ignore his duties. That was just to strengthen his ability to focus on awareness, right? To not be distracted, to not be attached. But once he strengthened that skill within himself, he went right back to his role. And he performed his role without being confused about who he was. So, this is saying again that we want to let go of the idea that we are the person. We want to accept Jesus as a symbol of all that is true about us and then rise within ourselves to the acceptance of the new covenant, which is that oneness, which is that awareness, that sameness that we all have. Again, you know, our minds may be very different. My mind and the mind of Wayne and the mind of Francine may be very different. But our awareness is exactly the same, exactly, in fact, the same one, mm-hmm. And so that's what we want to awaken to. Sentence 4. The acceptance of the new covenant is the acceptance of new sight, and new sight within the world is the open doorway from the world. For as you see the illusion of separateness as an illusion you desire no more, you will return your mind to the true heart, and that is the heart of one. Return your mind to the heart. And yeah, that's Ramana Maharshi's teachings too. He's always saying to let the mind be absorbed in the heart. Right? And then the heart shines without being blocked by the mind anymore. So that's Hebrews 8 and Hebrews 9, and it seems to me that the primary teaching of Hebrews 8 and Hebrews 9 is to let go of attachment, and really you have two ways of practicing it, and maybe it's even teaching that one is a little higher level than the other, but you got to be honest and practice the one that's best for you. One is to let go of attachment to things, ideas, people, fantasies about the future, even regrets about the past, right? Like, the other is to let go of you. Let go of attachment to you, right? So, why don't we just say this week that at one level or the other, or both, if you're able to practice both simultaneously, because ultimately they're really the same thing, why don't we practice this week, whenever we notice we're attached, letting go of that attachment? Doesn't mean you might be like King Janaka. You might still do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you let go of the attachment to it. Yeah.
Goes back and forth.
And I will turn off the recorder.